With Laura Fox.
Podcast. Now, buying a car can be stressful, especially if it's secondhand and you just haven't a bog's notion how they all work. The anxiety can get even higher if it's your first time, but joining me now to help us navigate the way through the murky waters of buying your first car is motoring editor of the Sunday Independent, Geraldine Herbert. Geraldine, thank you so much for coming in today.
Good morning.
Good morning. You obviously heard at the beginning of the show today, I was talking about sitting into an automatic car for the first time. My life has changed. I am so delighted with myself. But it's a huge thing to buy your first car and to go like out into the world and you've no idea what you're doing and who to bring with you and all that. So we're here to get it from you today, all of the best advice that we possibly can. And we're going to kick it off first, because before people start actively searching for a car, right, what elements do they initially need to consider? Cost, I assume, is the main one that we need to look after.
Yeah, to be honest, Laura, I think the first thing you have to do is just set yourself a budget. Now, by that, I mean the chances are you're going to get a loan. So just figure out how much can I comfortably, and that's the word, comfortably afford to pay back on a monthly basis. Yeah. Now, the next thing you need to do is you need to factor in how much it's going to cost you to actually run the car. So you have to get insurance. Mm-hmm. You have to tax it. You'll have to park it somewhere. You'll have to put fuel in it. Or if it's an electric car, you'll have to charge it. Also, the chances are if you're buying your first car, it's going to be an older car. You're going to have to repair it.
Yeah.
So have some money put by just for contingencies like that. You're going to have to get an NCT test. So they're all the kind of things. So you need more than just the money to pay the loan. You need to be able to. So try and get some idea in terms of insurance as well. So ring around a few insurance companies. So, you know, the stuff like that you need to do.
It is all good and well looking at the price of a car and saying, yeah, okay, I can stretch that. But if that's what your opinion is of stretching it, there's no point, because it's just going to be a disaster.
Yeah, don't stretch, because anything could happen. And with a secondhand car, with the best will in the world, even if you buy it well, a year down the line, if something needs replacing, and it's not that something's gone wrong, it's just natural replacement, it could cost you more money than you'd bargain for and stuff like that. So just be really careful. You don't want to be on the pin of your collar. You know, the great news is I've got a new car. The bad news is I can't afford to go out of the weekend anymore. You don't want that. So just,
or I can't afford
careful
to drive the bloody thing. You know, you don't want it sitting there
idle, parked. Yeah,
because you can't actually take it out. The vast majority of first cars, as you mentioned there, are secondhand. They're older models. What are your tips for approaching this? Because most of us, myself included, have very little knowledge about cars in the market.
Yeah, again, I mean, I would always say look at something popular. Like if you look at a kind of first car, a Ford Fiesta, that kind of size, Toyota Yaris, Volkswagen Polo, you know, people for years have learned to drive in those and have used them as a first car because they're good, solid cars. Yeah. So you want to look at your lifestyle, though. If you have some particular reason that you need a massive boot, something to do with, you know, you work freelance and you need, they're the kind of things that will dictate what you need. If you do long distance, maybe you need something slightly bigger, maybe the size of a Golf rather than a Polo, maybe a Ford Focus, you know, so a slightly bigger hatchback. If you do smaller distances, if you only need, you know, if you're only kind of running in and out of the city, maybe you need something even smaller. You might consider an electric car if you have a home charger. There's more of those coming on the market secondhand. So have a think about, what do I need? What do I need a car to do for me? It's not just to transport me from A to B. Is there anything else I need from it?
The electric one is a big one, obviously, as well, because it's where we're trying to move into. There's the hybrid options too for what you're going for, because, you know, we're not fully built for electric up and down the country just yet.
Yeah, the charge, if you're depending on the charging infrastructure, really depends on what journeys you're making. Yeah. Now, that said, if you could afford it and you're buying a brand new car and with a range of 500 kilometres, you don't have to worry about these things. But let's be honest, if you're looking at a secondhand car, there aren't that many options. The chances are you're going petrol or diesel, unfortunately. Yeah. Like, you know, if you're going back a good few years, which most people are, that's really what you're looking at.
Talking about affording, I know we kind of touched on it in the very beginning, but what would be the rule of thumb, like, to calculate how much you can actually afford on a secondhand car?
Yeah, I mean, there's a rule of thumb that you shouldn't borrow more than 20% of your monthly income. But I think, again, it goes down to, like, if you're somebody who likes to save for your holiday and you like to be, you know, if you're very conservative and you don't take risks and you like lots of money in the bank and whatever, you know, so as I said, that's where I think the word comfortably comes in. Think about how much can I still have the life I want? And let's be honest, you know, we don't want to trade off too much and still comfortably pay this and allow myself some wiggle room. So,
yeah, so being comfortable is the main thing about all this. Not put yourselves under pressure.
Comfortable covers the multitude.
Anything. Okay, let's say that you were in a used car sales warehouse, right? What are the basic things that we should be looking out for in something we like? Like, I know we mentioned the boot there and, you know, the size and the range and all that. Is that kind of what it essentially comes down to?
Yeah, the other things are, even if you know absolutely nothing about a car, what you want to look at is look inside it, right? Now, inside a car can tell you an awful lot. If there's a load of wear and tear, so you'll see wear and tear on the steering wheel, the pedals, but the mileage is quite low. That should send alarm bells ringing, because you're thinking to yourself, okay, there's something wrong here somewhere. So cars can be what's known as clocked, so the mileage could be rolled back on it. So if you, the interior should tally with the mileage. So if there's lots of wear and tear and it's high mileage, this is a car that's been driven long, it's probably reliable. Never be put off by high mileage. It means it's been on
that's
the road.
That's what I wanted to ask you, right? Because this is obviously something that has been thrown around in my house for so long. You know, it's like minus this, minus that. And I've never actually asked the question of like, why should I care about this? Like, genuinely, like, I know it's down to bog standard, but I know that there are other people listening being like, I have no clue what this is.
Yeah, I mean, a car that's driven a lot means it's been on the road. It's good. I'd prefer to see a car with high mileage than a car with low mileage, but that's 10 years old. Because then you think to yourself, it's been sitting idly around for a very long time. So, you know, there's a kind of, I'd say 20,000 kilometres a year is nothing to put on a car. So look at it in terms of that. You know, so high mileage, when you look at the age, may not be a problem. The other thing is look at the outside of it. Make sure all the paintwork is the same, because if it's not, and this is something you can spot quite easily, if it's not, it means it's probably been crashed and repaired, and it could have been repaired badly.
Okay.
That's something you don't want. Make sure everything lines up. And there's no, like, even if you know nothing about cars, that there's nothing glaringly, you know, obviously wrong with it. Then when you've decided, actually, do you know something, I'd like to see that a bit further, then you might consider bringing somebody with you who does know about cars. And the other thing, Laura, is take it for a test drive. The amount of people who think you should just walk in, buy a car and, you know, afterwards, the test drive is the most important thing. Take it out in the road, make sure it feels, you know, smooth. There's no weird, I know weird sounds don't sound very mechanical, but you know them when you hear them. So turn the radio off, make sure everything works.
Yeah.
And, you know, make sure that you feel comfortable in it. You've good visibility. Take it to a car park, reverse park it, and make sure, you know, all of these things are checked. Take it on a motorway. These are just things, you know, you do need to test drive it.
You were saying there, obviously, about like when you know what you want to go after and you're going for test drive and you're looking at it. Like, is this the point where we should be bringing someone with us if we really and truly don't know? Like, but who are we bringing? Like, what type of person should we be looking at? Like, a parent, like someone who knows more about cars, a friend, a cousin? Like, is there a rule of thumb here?
Yeah, I mean, if you have a friend that knows lots about cars, bring them. I always find when you talk to people about who did you bring for your first car, my dad. Dads seem to be the ones that get hauled in for all of this. So bring your dad if that's the case. It's funny though, I was looking up a piece I did, I wrote about 10 years ago about women buying cars. And I used to always give this advice: if you're buying a car and you're bringing somebody, don't bring a man, because the minute you walk into a dealership, they'll talk to the man.
Yeah.
I'm hoping things have got better since then, but I still hear from women. So I always advise women to bring another woman. I know that sounds terrible. And as I said, I'm sure I'll get, you know, cancelled for this, but I'm sure things have moved on. But generally, they still do.
I'll report back, Geraldine. Right, the weekend, I'll let you know. But then at the same time, I think I'll be letting Brandy Muscle talking anyway, or I might bring him a power with me. Okay, who knows? She knows her bits and what's going on. Pros and cons of buying from a dealer versus a private seller.
Okay, so most people reckon they'll get a better deal if they do it privately.
Yeah.
But actually, what you have to look at is what happens if something goes wrong. Right. Now, if you buy from a dealer, you're covered by consumer law. So the car has to be roadworthy. Great.
Yeah.
It actually has to go on the road. It has to be of reasonable quality given its age. And it has to be as described. So if they tell you it's a Ford Fiesta with 30,000 kilometres on the clock, there has to be 30,000 kilometres on the clock. If you buy privately, you have literally no comeback if anything goes wrong.
Okay.
You can take a civil case through the courts, but that's a really big mess. Now, the other thing as well is the law is very much, it works on the basis that it really kind of almost protects the seller rather than the buyer. So they don't actually have to legally tell you an awful lot about the car. Now, they can't give you wrong information, but they can just not give you
information. So you just don't ask the right questions.
So you have to ask questions like, has the car ever been crashed? Has there ever been mechanical work or body work done to it? Has it been imported? And if it was, were all the charges paid in it? Is the mileage correct? When was it last NCT'd? Is there outstanding finance on it? Now, if you ask those questions, they're legally obliged to give you the right answers.
Okay.
But as I said, if you don't ask them and they don't give you that information,
then,
yeah.
Okay.
Whereas at least with a dealership, even if you're paying slightly more, you're driving away knowing, do you know what? If anything goes wrong, they have to refund this, repair this or replace this. And that is worth it, in my opinion.
Okay, so you're kind of covered a little bit more.
Yeah.
Warranty. I know a lot of dealerships will offer a warranty on a car versus private sellers don't. Like, should you be wary of buying a car that doesn't have a warranty?
Look, ideally, if you can get a warranty, it's a guarantee. It's you know, it'll give you some sort of security.
Yeah.
That said, though, a guarantee doesn't replace your statutory rights. So if, regardless, if you're buying from a dealership and it's an old car and they're giving you maybe a 3-month warranty, when it runs out, you're still covered. There are certain things. So remember that. Your statutory rights are more important than the warranty. The warranty is just, you know, I suppose a comfort thing more than anything with an older car.
Yeah, and also that's really good to know, because I think in your head, if you bought a car and something went wrong in like the 6 month and you only had a 4 month guarantee, you would just naturally be like, oh damn, it's out of guarantee, and you'd look to go fixing it yourself.
Yeah, I mean, if it's something that it was sold with and you should have been told at the time, yeah, I mean, go back and say, look, you know, this wasn't what it was about, I was sold or whatever. So
What about trying to haggle on price?
Do you know something? It's always worth haggling. You know, they mightn't give you a discount on price, but they might throw in something extra.
Okay.
And the other thing to remember as well, when you're negotiating a deal with the dealership, is always look at the total price you're spending. Because it's very easy when they start talking about monthly amounts. If the monthly amount in your mind, because you've done your budget and you've decided how much you can afford, and you can only afford, say, €300 a month, and all of a sudden they say, but look, for 320, you could get this slightly bigger car. Always remember, those extra €20 a month add up. So suddenly your total price has gone through the roof in comparison to what you're expecting. So negotiate a total price, not a monthly
repayment. And not only do they actually add up in your monthly repayments, if you're getting a slightly bigger car, it means that there are now slightly bigger tyres, slightly bigger issues. You are paying
slightly
more across the board.
Slightly bigger costs.
Yes,
it'll cost you more to run it. Remember that as well, particularly when you're starting off and you're looking at insurance. Insurance companies don't like big engines, you know, for new drivers. So the easier and simpler you can keep it, the better. Smaller engine, all of those things.
I have a couple of more questions here that obviously I want to ask you, but we just got a text in that said, can you please ask about a car that will fit 3 kids' car seats across the back seat? That's tough. We've had a lot of cars as well that have like 304, 303.
Again, it depends on what sort of budget you have. If you have very little, there's some of the older MPVs that would do that. You know, the old Citroens, the Renault Scenics, all of those would have had 3 ISOFIX. Now, really, what you're looking at are SUVs. That's your only alternative there. Again, you're kind of looking at 7-seaters in order to do that. So it really depends on your budget. But if you have very little, go back to the old MPVs that used to be everywhere 10 years ago.
Okay, fantastic. Hope that one helps out on that. Another thing, right, when it comes to financing, right, are there options out there apart from going to your bank for a loan?
Yeah, you can get a PCP on used cars as well. PCPs tend to be things that people only consider for new cars. Mm-hmm. So basically, the idea of a PCP is it's not the best form of finance if you want to keep the car forever. But what they are good for is if you want the use of a car basically for 3 years. So it's like a leasing agreement.
Okay.
It's like a hire purchase, but it's different from hire purchase in the sense that at the end of the agreement, you can either give back the car, you can roll on to another PCP, or you can buy the car. Again, I don't think buying the car is the best idea. Really, what you want to do is just roll on to another one.
Okay, so that's PCP.
Yes, so it's cheaper than a bank loan and it's cheaper than hire purchase because you're not buying the car. You're literally paying for the use of a car.
Renting it.
Yeah, basically.
Okay, essentially.
Yeah, you own it and you look after it and you do all the servicing. But yeah, essentially it's like that.
Okay, so you're kind of guaranteed then at the end of the 3 years that you can get another car.
Yeah.
All right, fair enough. The next one is very subjective, but do you think there's a minimum spend that people should be looking at when it comes to a secondhand car?
See, I don't really, because you could strike it lucky and not spend a huge amount of money, but get a car that was really well looked after by one owner and you should be okay. And therefore, I wouldn't specify spending a certain amount. I would specify, we'll go back to that comfortable word again, as much as you can comfortably afford and get the best that you can. And the best that you can is the car that's most suited to you and won't let you down. So do your research, think about all these things, bring your person, your dad, your whatever. That's really where it's not money, it's buying wisely, I think, is the key thing rather than spending lots of money.
So then, Geraldine, just to like wrap it all up with like the most common mistakes that first time buyers can make, like, are we looking at, you know, not asking the right questions if you're buying privately, not making sure you're getting the best deal if you're going to a dealership, not looking at the car internally and externally for all of those points that you pointed out?
Yeah, I think that, you know, go in knowing what you want, have thought about it, knowing what you can spend, what you can afford, all of those things. But then the two things I would say is test drive the car. It really makes a difference. I've been in cars where they're really nice, but they just don't suit you. They might just, you know, they don't feel like your car.
Yeah.
Then, you know, are reversing them, just the visibility is bad if these things. So test driving is really, really important. But the other thing to do is get a history check on it. It'll only cost you about €30. You can do these online. You put in the reg, it'll tell you all about the history of the car. It'll tell you if there's outstanding finance, if it's been written off, if it's been clocked, if it's been stolen. This is really, really important.
So where do you do that?
Yeah, never buy a cartel.ie, motor check, any of those. Never buy a car without doing a history check.
Okay, fantastic. I didn't even know that existed.
There you go.
Something that we weren't privy to, right? We've learned so much in that. Geraldine, thank you so much for coming in with us today. I took a lot of mental notes. I will be listening back to that. If you did miss that chat and you want to have a listen back to it, it will be up on our 2FM podcast afterwards. That was Geraldine Herbert, motoring editor for the Sunday Independent. Thank you so much for joining us. 2FM with Laura Fox. Podcast.